You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Today, we're going to take a ride to Union Station.
Thanks for going, Metro. We're on this ride together. So
yeah, it's probably been a while since you've heard that voice. Fewer people have been taking public transit over the past year. LA Metro has been gutted by COVID. Last year saw 213 million riders on the Metro, as opposed to the 370 million that used the system the year before. And for the most part, its sprawling net of 92 Metro stations and more than 2,500 buses has been slow to fill back up, even as people venture out again. A transit superfan Katrina Kaiser is on the bus, heading to Union Station, one of the few people boarding trains and buses throughout this pandemic.
I would always try to peek in the windows of the buses or trains going by to see how many people were on them. And for a while, it would just be like three people in the bus, two people in the train, car at a time. And it's like, wow, that is so lonely. I wish I could make them less lonely.
Now, that might be becoming the norm. In general, ridership has been on the decline in LA for the past decade. But COVID's made it much worse. It's been driving up car sales and keeping many folks working at home.
The next stop is...
So who's going to continue riding those buses and trains? And what is Metro doing to attract new riders? KCRW's Nisha Venkat has more on the story.
Now arriving.
This year, transit ridership numbers are increasing, but not by much. When the pandemic first hit, habits changed for many Angelenos, like for Katrina Kaiser. They're a moderator of Angelic Thoughts for SoCal Tots, a nearly 2,000-person Facebook group for transit superfans in the greater LA area. Their goal with the group? To create a space where people can get together and imagine a better LA, one that runs on public transit.
I was taking it for errands here and there, less consistently, whereas previously I was taking it every day to get to work. I felt really sad. Like, I know that they didn't miss me, but I miss them.
They're worried that the once thriving transit system might never return to what it was, which is something transit experts are worried about, too. Many say that Metro ridership has broadly fallen for the past decade because people who are transit dependent have found the money to buy cars. And COVID has pushed even more people into car ownership.
If people buy cars, they ride transit less. There's less fare box revenue to support this service.
Marlon Bornet is a professor of urban planning at USC. He says the pandemic may have accelerated a negative feedback loop.
And so that's the kind of vicious cycle that you don't want agencies caught in. I'm not saying that Metro's in that cycle, but definitely the pandemic has delivered quite a shock, and pushing more people into car ownership has probably been one of them.
Natalie Bettendorf is one of the people caught in the feedback loop. She's a college student who grew up taking public transit in the Bay Area and never saw herself buying a car until much later in her life, even after she moved to LA to attend USC. But then the pandemic hit, and Bettendorf wanted to take steps to keep her and her family safe.
A car is kind of the safest place where you're isolated and can actually have your own mask off. I found this really cute Honda HR-V, a used one in Berkeley, and I ended up, you know, getting a lot of my savings together that I had been saving up for a car. I knew that was going to be a big purchase, but it made a lot of sense at the time.
Now that Bettendorf's a car owner, she can't see herself going back to taking the Metro, even though she's passionate about public transit and sustainability. And that's making her question whether she wants to live here at all.
I'm just realizing how big of a priority it is for me to live in a place, one, with clean air, which is not how I would describe LA, and two, like feeling, you know, not like I'm spending half of my life sitting at the driver's seat, like in traffic. It feels to me like driving places and being in, you know, kind of stopped on the freeway feels like such an enormous waste of time.
So what is Metro doing to try to lure Angelenos out of their cars and onto buses and trains? Metro's chief innovation officer, Joshua Schenck, said that the agency was already fighting an uphill battle in a region that's built to favor personal vehicles, and that people have been buying more cars since before the pandemic.
This region made a decision long ago to prioritize personal vehicle traffic over almost everything else in the region. There are miles and miles and miles of pavement all given away to whoever wants to drive on them whenever they feel like it at no cost, right?
That doesn't mean they're giving up on getting people to ride. Metro is looking over preliminary drafts of a plan to provide free transit to students and low-income Angelenos. It's expected to be presented to the board in September. They're also redesigning their bus fleet to provide faster and more efficient service to fit pandemic ridership patterns. Plus, Metro is trying to reassure reluctant riders like Bettendorf that public transit is safe. But Shank says there's always risk, just like there are risks with driving a car.
Sometimes the feeling on the system can be unsafe and can feel, even though I know the statistics and I know the data and I know that I'm probably safer on the Metro than I am driving in a car, for example, or even walking down the street.
There are risks riders face beyond just COVID, though. New data shows that Metro might face other challenges in retaining ridership. A study last week from the LA Department of Transportation showed that women were less likely to be able to access their daily destinations than men and were also more worried about their personal safety on public transportation. Metro's ambitious plans to roll out new buses and metro lines aren't sitting well with everybody either. Transit fans like Kaiser say that the agency's first priority should be keeping current riders en route. And to do that, the agency needs to focus on the basics, like arriving on time and getting people to where they need to go.
Do your drivers know if they're collecting fares or not? Do your trains not, you know, have to stop and wait for another train to pass, delaying everybody in unpredictable ways? And hopefully having their existing riders, you know, not have a terrible experience. Then the next challenge is steadily increasing the level of service to places where people want to go.
For public transit riders like Kaiser, getting people where they need to go in a better way is a better LA. For KCRW, I'm Nisha Venkat.
Well, the pandemic may have you thinking twice about getting on public transportation, but what about going out to restaurants and bars? New York City will soon require workers and patrons at indoor businesses, bars, restaurants, even gyms, to show proof of vaccination. And now, L.A.'s city attorney and candidate for mayor, Mike Feuer, has asked L.A. county leaders to do the same. A little more than half of residents here fully vaccinated, that could significantly cut down on the customer pool. But some local bars and restaurants aren't letting that stop them from taking matters into their own hands. Paul Kalt is the owner of Conservatory in West Hollywood, which is requiring either proof of vaccination or a recent negative COVID test. Paul, welcome.
Hello, thank you very much, Steve.
Peter Alexander is the co-owner of Akbar in Silver Lake, which is requiring customers to be vaccinated as well. And Peter, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
I'm going to start with you, Peter. I want to know what led to your decision to require vaccines over at Akbar.
It just seemed like the logical thing to do with the COVID numbers rising, the rate of breakthrough infections rising. I'm just wanting to take care of my staff, protect my staff as much as possible. We've had a very rough 6 months to the past year and a half has been, you know, devastating to us, a really rocky ride with major ups and downs. And it's all we can do to just be open and running. And the last thing I need is for, or any of us need, is for our staff to contract COVID. So it's for their protection and for the protection of clients that choose to come in.
How did you guys do over the pandemic? Because Akbar was closed, right? You have Kitchen next door, which is a restaurant, right?
Correct. Yeah, we were able to partner with them during the alfresco period and make a little bit of money in our parking lot. Luckily, we have a parking lot. So that helped us eke out a living through the summer. But when it closed during the fall, we got pretty desperate, and we were considering closing the business. Then we started a GoFundMe drive, which kind of saved the day. Our community rallied, and it helped keep us going and got us through the worst times. But so now we're reopening, and it's been difficult. It's been a challenge.
But as you're saying, you're trying to protect your staff from this dreadful virus. And, you know, I wonder if you're worried at all that this mandate will hurt your business going forward. Will people be like, well, I'm not vaccinated, so I guess I'm not going there.
Well, we've instituted our own mandate, so we have that in place now, and our business is doing okay. I think luckily for us, we have a younger clientele. It's mostly people in their 20s and 30s. So they don't feel, for some reason, as threatened as probably older patrons in other establishments. I don't know. You know, we've ridden out so many waves. We just have to do what we can and take what we can, take it as it comes. Throughout the pandemic, it's just ups and downs, and we're all just trying to keep our feet on the ground.
Paul, your rules are a little bit different. You're allowing people the option of either being vaccinated or testing negative for COVID. What led you to take that approach?
Well, we looked at the numbers out there, and we understand, you know, with the Delta variant rising, that there was obviously a safety concern. And while people definitely have the access to the vaccine here, a lot of people still haven't taken it for one reason or another. And we didn't want to totally exclude those people, just so long as they could, you know, show us that they had been tested recently. And overall, what we're trying to do is minimize the risk. There's no guarantees whether you've been vaccinated or not, or tested or not. But what we're trying to do is minimize risk, and we wanted to just be somewhat inclusive to you know, our customer base.
Are you getting any reaction from those customers?
We have been getting a lot of reaction. Most of it positive, really, from our guests and regulars, and, you know, even new people that are coming to the restaurant. A lot of them feel, you know, terrific about the whole program in place. You know, everyone understands that there's still some risk, but that it's been minimized and that they feel safer, a bit safer, knowing that, you know, at least we're taking those precautions. We have had some people come by that, you know, didn't have proof of either. And, you know, we get a little bit of, like, you know, slack about it, but generally, it's been overall positive, and even those people understand, and we haven't had any confrontations so far, in person anyway.
You have to have someone there to check these items. Like, I suspect this is like a vaccine bouncer, right? Like you have someone checking IDs, you have also someone, or maybe it's the same person, I don't know, who's checking your vaccine card or checking your latest test for COVID to make sure that it's negative. Is that financially affecting you? You have to hire someone to do that?
Well, we do on the weekends, which Friday night through Sunday, because we tend to get, you know, those are our busy times, and it's just too much for a host or even a manager to take on. But yes, we do definitely need the security, and not only, you know, for, you know, to check the cards, but also just to make sure that if anybody gets out of line or, you know, gives us attitude that is, you know, unwarranted, you know, that we have some, you know, level of safety and security there.
Peter, what about you? You know, are you having to hire someone to do this, to check the vaccine cards? I mean, how's that affecting your bottom line?
Well, luckily for us, we already have a bouncer at the door, and we have a door guy checking IDs already for a bar. It's 21 and over. So we haven't had to have, it hasn't really affected us financially. It may take a little longer to get in the door on a weekend, but they're pretty much set up. And the community, I have to say, people have been very understanding and participatory. We haven't gotten much blowback from that. People are happy to do what they can to keep our people safe and to keep their friends as safe as possible. Nobody wants this thing.
Yeah, nobody wants this thing, exactly. We're hearing it's pretty easy, by the way, to make a fake vaccine card. Remember fake IDs? Remember that was yeah, a thing? Probably still is a thing, I would imagine.
You know, we anticipated that, and what are you going to do? You can only do what you can do. You know, we can take the steps that, we can only take the steps we can to keep everybody safe.
Paul, same with you at Conservatory?
Yeah, same with us. I mean, there has to be some sort of honor system here. You know, we do check documents, but we can't tell if they're, you know, forged or not. You know, we we're the staff's trained to understand, you know, what types of documents, you know, are seem to be legitimate, but obviously if people really want to fake it or forge it, we're really not going to be able to know that. So there has to be some type of, you know, honor system here as well.
Well, honor system means people being honorable.
Yeah.
You know,
we've also put in place a policy at our bar where if you're ordering a drink, you have to have a mask on, because that's the most concerning point of contact. When someone's screaming across a bar and you're leaning in to hear their order, you know, you both better have masks on.
Yeah. That leads to one last question. I mean, do you turn the music down a little bit more? I mean, what do you do to limit, you know, people shouting or being so close together or, you know, those things? Because even vaccinated people can get this. As we've seen, there have been some breakthrough cases. That's got to be concerning, right?
Yeah, it's very concerning. But, you know, my clientele base are people in their 20s who want to come out and drink and dance. So, you know, there's an acceptable level of risk that they're taking, that they're making a choice to take on their own just by going out. Me, myself, I leave at night.
Yes. Like you said, nobody wants this.
That's right.
Nobody wants it. And I think also, you know, we try and, like, at least from the restaurant perspective, we try and, you know, we have, you know, we do require that you wear a mask when you're not at the table or dining or drinking, that kind of thing. All our staff, we do have all our staff, you know, in masks and stuff like that, you know, for their safety as well as, like, you know, the customer base safety. But, you know, you're just trying to do the best you can. And I do agree with Peter that, you know, when these people come out, you know there's some level of risk, and it's just our job to try and minimize that risk and do the best we can in terms of checking, you know, for either COVID tests or checking for vaccine cards or, you know, having the staff, you know, masked up, you know, those types of things we put into place, you know, just to, you know, do the best we can.
We want to stay in business, and we want to be there for our people, but in doing so, we're taking a risk, and everybody who comes into our business is taking a risk. But that seems to be the new normal.
Thanks to you both for coming on and sharing your thoughts with us and talking about this. You know, it's been such a difficult time for everybody, and I know specifically in the food service and in the bar industry. Peter Alexander, co-owner of Akbar in Silver Lake, Paul Kaltz, owner of Conservatory in West Hollywood. Thanks to you both.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much, Steve. Pleasure. And stay safe.
By the way, a couple of members of the LA City Council, including its president, Nuri Martinez, and Mitch O'Farrell, introduced a measure today that would require all Angelenos show proof of having at least one COVID shot before entering any kind of indoor business like a bar or a restaurant, a gym perhaps. Enough is enough already, quoting Martinez today.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
I'm moving along now with Greater LA on KCRW, and you would think that more than a year of financial turmoil and a bunch of people out of work would maybe force the rent down in Los Angeles, right? Wrong. Reporters at Crosstown LA, this is a local data journalism outlet, examined rents in 9 cities across LA County between May of 2020 and May of 2021, and they found that rents fell in only 3 of them, while rising in 6 of them. Taylor Mills is one of those reporters who's been looking at the numbers, and she joins me right now. Hey, Taylor.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Where did you get these rent figures from, by the way? These are averages, I would assume.
Yeah, we got these from Apartment List, and these are looking at overall rent rates. So this considers studio, one bedroom, two bedroom. So really just these units that are meant for either single people or for families.
When you talk about the nine cities that you looked at, which one of them saw the biggest rent increases since the beginning of the pandemic?
The biggest hikes that we saw were in these kind of outside of the urban area. So Santa Clarita and Calabasas had the biggest spikes. And then when you look for biggest decreases, you see West Hollywood and Santa Monica are in those two that are at the top there.
That decreased, so Santa Monica and West Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah. West Hollywood saw a 6.56% decrease. They actually the average used to be above $2,000 per month, and now it's below. So that's a really big dip that you see there.
But the two cities that you saw the biggest increases were Calabasas and Santa Clarita, and I wonder if that has, I mean, did you get reasons for that or try and dig into, because I'm sure there are a number of different reasons, but one of which is maybe people were fearful of living close to one another, you know, like densely populated areas, and in the middle of a pandemic, you want to go somewhere where maybe there's a little more space.
Yeah, when you're sitting at home, you kind of really get to realize just how much space you have during quarantine. We talked to real estate analysts, and they said that residents really value space over local amenities. They would rather have, you know, a bigger yard. They would rather have a bigger apartment and maybe pay that extra price than to be closer to restaurants and bar scenes and really nightlife that you can see in like West Hollywood and Santa Monica. And so that's why you see these kind of suburban, more quiet areas really had an increase. And also another thing too is like with work really being remote and that being the norm from now on, people don't really have to be close to their commute. They know that they're probably going to stay at home more and not really have to make that 30, 45 minute drive into the city. And so that's what makes these areas more appealing.
And we saw the numbers decrease in those other, as you mentioned, cities, West Hollywood and Santa Monica, even downtown LA. Are we talking about a dramatic decrease? You said it went from 2000 or in the 2000s to under 2000.
Yeah. So as of May 2021, West Hollywood's average rent is at $1,910 per month. And looking at Santa Monica, it went from, you know, about an $83 decrease from $2,183 per month to just $2,100. And these are pretty, I guess, significant if you look at the overall trend in real estate in Los Angeles, right? Like, we would expect it to always go up for these neighborhoods because they are popular and they are lively and happening. But the fact that they are going down really just goes to show the effect of this pandemic on people's priorities in terms of looking at real estate.
What about, I mean, does this correlate with home prices? Is it like commensurate with what's going on in the real estate market? Because what we're seeing in the real estate market, that home values are just skyrocketing.
Yeah, I think, you know, a huge thing to think about when you think about Los Angeles is in Los Angeles City, only 36.8% of our population lives in owner-occupied housing, which means that they actually own either the unit or the property that they're on. And so that market continues to be stratified away, you know, from either any decrease that could be seen in these urban areas. So it really is a completely different story from when you look at the rental market.
And the rest of the cities, talk about the cities that didn't see any increases or decreases. They were pretty much the same. I know Burbank and Glendale and some other cities as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, those are just, again, that might just be an issue of availability, right? If there's really nothing available, because I think, you know, they were slow in development, you know, construction slowed during the pandemic. And so there really wasn't the ability for these, you know, realtors to actually flip things. So those were just kind of the two that we saw. And then also, you know, Pasadena and Long Beach kind of stayed the same as well. But yeah, nothing really dramatic from those neighborhoods.
And according to this LA County Housing Needs Report, this was published a couple of months ago, back in May, renters apparently need to earn about 2.5 times the minimum wage to afford the average rent in Los Angeles County. That's more proof of LA's housing affordability crisis?
Yeah, and almost 500,000 of low-income renters do not have access to affordable homes. And Right now, we are kind of staring down the end of a rent moratorium in the state of California. Renters are shielded through September 30th, but what happens after that, and especially in a continued economic stress, it really remains to be seen.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. Taylor Mills, reporter at Crosstown LA. Taylor, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
That's it for today. Tomorrow, jet fuel has become a hot and expensive commodity of late. How's that going to affect firefighting efforts from above here in California? By the way, if you have questions regarding wildfires here, preventing them, dealing with them, surviving them, send them our way, those questions. KCRW.com/AskGreaterLA. Or call and leave a voicemail at this number, 424-538-8581. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time and your ears tonight. Have yourself a great night.